Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Westchester County, New York Executive George Latimer, a Democrat. Welcome, George Latimer. How is it to be a Democrat in Westchester County these days?
Alan, great to be with you. And it's pretty good to be a Democrat in Westchester. I think when you look at the movement of this county politically over the course of my lifetime, I'm 67 years old right now.
No.
When I was a kid. Yeah, afraid so. When I was a kid growing up here, it was solid Republican turf.
Yep.
Nelson Rockefeller's home county, Republicans in every corner, perhaps second only to Nassau County in its Republican allegiance. And now it's a Democratic county. My election in 2017, when I beat Rob Astorino, I won with over 55% of the vote. We have 16 out of 17 county legislators that are Democrat. Our six cities all have Democratic mayors. So there's been a major shift in the political allegiances in this county over the last 15, 20 years.
So what happened? Did a lot of New Yorkers just move up to Westchester? A lot of New York City people, just like they did to Long Island from Queens? Or what happened?
You know, there's a number of things that happened, I think. First of all, we do have the closest commute to Manhattan from any of the suburbs. And they're all beautiful suburbs. Nassau, Northern New Jersey, Fairfield, they're all great places. But we have the quickest commute, and so I think we got many of the folks from Manhattan that brought their Upper East Side, Upper West Side affiliations with them. When you reach that point in life where you want a house and you're raising kids and you want good schools and safe streets, et cetera. So that helped us, and a lot of the folks who lived here for many years that moved to Florida, North Carolina, wherever, sold their houses to that young element. We have a large population of people of color, large minority population, both African Americans and Latinx, and that has changed, you know, the politics in certain places. And I also think that, we always had a Republican mindset that was considered progressive. We were the county of not just Rockefeller, but Ogden Reed and folks like that. And as the Republican Party has moved further to the right, taking on that kind of Texas mindset, I think Westchester Republicans became more independent-minded and started to vote for Democrats as long as we showed that we were fiscally responsible and, you know, we understood how to deliver basic services. But we're always under the test. This is still a county where Republicans can win, Democrats can win, so you have to earn it every day.
So how about them Clintons?
Well, they are quite a presence in the county. You will, you know, if you go to Chappaqua, as I often do in my line of work now, you might see the president at a bookstore or at a luncheonette. And there are events and activities at the library where the secretary might be there. And they have a very suburban hometown effect when you see them. Everybody knows who they are and everybody, you know, is gracious to see them. They'll take pictures with you. And it's pretty amazing that people who are that famous live, you know, in one of our hometowns.
Now, one of your towns, of course, is Scarsdale. I know a little something about it. I used to date a girl 1,000 years ago from Scarsdale. There was a lot of money and a lot of taxes to support the school system. Is that business of the inequality of schools, you know, in the state? Governors talk about it. Poor districts get less. Rich districts somehow tax people more. Can you help us out with whether that's a good or a bad thing?
Well, I think, you know, you begin with the reality that school districts have historically been paid for by the local tax base or whatever the jurisdiction is. Westchester happens to have quite a lot of very wealthy communities. Scarsdale, Bronxville, Rye, Armonk, Larchmont. I know I sound like a Metro North conductor, but there are a lot of elite communities here. And, you know, that's reflected by the fact that Martha Stewart lives here and Roger Goodell and Rob Manfredi and, you know, famous people of all sort of here. But We also have our poverty. I grew up in Mount Vernon, which is one of the urban centers right on the border of the Bronx. And the truth of the matter is, if you were in the Bronx, in the Wakefield section, the Woodlawn section, and you just drove north, you wouldn't know when you crossed into Westchester, because it doesn't look like, you know, the Rockefeller estate in Yonkers, Mount Vernon, or New Rochelle. So we do have exactly what you describe, an inequity, where communities that have the property tax wealth, and I might add voters that don't mind voting for additional money for their schools, they have top quality schools in Scarsdale, Bronxville, Larchmont, as I said before. Our challenge, and of course, when I was in the state legislature and active on education issues, our challenge is to provide the money for the Yonkers and the Mount Vernons to try to bring them up further, because those tax base, even if they improve, will never get to the per student benefit that you'll get in a more wealthier community.
We're talking to Westchester County Executive George Latimer. He used to be an assemblyman. I knew him in those days. And now here he is doing a terrific job in Westchester County. Are you running for governor, assuming that Andrew doesn't go?
No. Look, I think there's about 20 other guys running for governor. I'm on the ballot this year to run for county executive. And I will tell you, Alan, because you do remember me when I was an assemblyman, I served in the state senate as well. Being county executive is really a great job in that you have a government to run. It's big enough where you can accomplish things, and we've accomplished some things here. And it tests you in a way that the legislature didn't test me.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that we can accomplish some things. We fix things that are broken. We pass progressive legislation. And, you know, you really don't want to not appreciate what this opportunity is. And I really do appreciate what it is as county executive.
I interview a lot of people. As you know, I'm old, much older than you are, and I you know, everybody always tells me I'm running for the seat I'm in, I'm not going to do it. But yeah. come on now, George. If in fact Andrew drops out and, you know, there's a vacancy, you think you might be interested? Here you are with all of this executive experience, and this might be a good thing for you to do.
Well, if I win the lottery, Alan, and you see that my name is down there for the mega billions, because look, let's be candid. You know it takes a ton of money to run for a major statewide office. And many times, if a person really says, I'm running for this, this is what I want, you wind up spending all your time raising money. And it takes your eye off the job that you have. So, look, whatever's going to happen next year, and I'm going to listen to all of your capital connections in the next few months, because you'll be talking to the guys who are announced and running. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. But nobody can predict. We haven't seen the report yet. We don't know what the reaction to the report is going to be. We know that there are people who already have a statewide footprint. So it's far too early to have any idea of what's going to go on. I will tell you, though, that being an executive is gratifying. And if I can do a good job here, that's fine. And if somewhere down the line somebody says what you've done in Westchester is indicative of some other level that you could work at, then, yeah, of course I'm going to talk about it. But only a fool would try to guess what's going to happen between now and next year.
Well, yes, I do it all the time. And so I suppose it puts me into that very category you've just announced.
No, you're a journalist, and a journalist can do that. A public official better do his job first, and don't worry about the speculation, you know?
Okay, so with everything else that's going on, and you and I are having some fun here, but COVID is extremely serious, and you're a county executive, and you've got hospitals, very good hospitals, to worry about. How are you handling it all?
Well, as you know, it hit Westchester first. The first 100 cases came out of the city of New Rochelle back in that first week of March. And, you know, we were hearing about the pandemic in Wuhan and Lombardy, Italy, and then bang, it's in New Rochelle. So it really, it really caused us to sort of redirect our attention. And we ramped up for it. But we had the support of the state. And I appreciate how the state was essential for the county and the local governments to respond to it. We went through the period of testing. We opened up a mobile testing site on county land, which we gave to the state, set it up down at Glen Island. That did a great job of testing people, because until we had the vaccinations, all we could do is try to contain it somehow. We couldn't really fight it. Now that the vaccinations have come along in January, we're doing a lot better. In our peak period, we had as many as 12,000 active cases of COVID. We're down now to probably about 400 active cases. Our vaccination rate, I think, is second only to Nassau County in the downstate region. We're about 78 and change percent of our people vaccinated. And that's the key, Alan. If we can get more of the remaining cohort vaccinated, then we're going to see the active caseload drop. And then, you know, we'll be able to handle it. Our hospitals never got to the breaking point of capacity. We had at one point as many as 600 people hospitalized for COVID. Right now, the last number I saw was about 15 or so. So we've done pretty well. But my final comment is Westchester County is not an island. People cross borders all the time. You live in Westchester, you work in the Bronx or Manhattan, you live in the Bronx, you come to Westchester every day, you cross the border into Fairfield or Rockland or what have you. So our numbers can't be viewed alone. We really have to look at what's happening in the New York metropolitan area. And those areas that haven't had as high a vaccination rate in the Bronx, let's say, or Rockland County, we're as interested in Westchester as them hitting their numbers as we are hitting our own numbers. That's how we can be sure that we'll have the mobility that the economy really requires you to do if you're going to be successful.
My father had a business in New Rochelle, so I spent a lot of time as a kid there. The foam rubber center, don't you know?
And I used Were you down on Main Street in New Rochelle?
It was on Main Street, but that's after he sold it. It was on North It was on North Avenue first.
North Avenue originally, yeah.
And then they went around the corner by the railroad station. Anyway, Westchester got on the map, as you suggest. New Rochelle was the sort of epicenter for a little while. But when you read that the variations of the COVID coming in rest as a county executive, it must make you nervous.
Well, it makes us concerned. And I think that the problem we have is because of the HIPAA laws, we can't know as a county government, a local government, of the people who test positive, were they unvaccinated or vaccinated? And there's a big difference, obviously, between the two. These vaccines are 95% effective. That still means one out of 20 people might fall into a COVID positive test, even though they've been vaccinated. We think they're mostly unvaccinated people. So therefore, the pressure isn't to shut down parts of the economy. The pressure is to get people vaccinated. And we're dealing with sort of two cohorts of people that are unvaccinated. I'm sure this is true everywhere, no different. One cohort are people who are poor, many times people of color. They have a certain distrust for the system and the government. And we have to try to reach them through people who they trust. People who are medical professionals or other prominent people within their demographic to get more of that vaccinations. The other piece that we deal with is very difficult to deal with. It's a sort of an ideological opposition to vaccination, and they seem to be relatively impervious to any particular persuasion that we can give them. They sort of believe the pandemic isn't what it is, and somehow it's a political statement. And I don't know how many people fall in each of those buckets, Alan. But the bottom line is we've got to get above 80%, 85% vaccinated if we really want to see the this variant not spread. Because if the variant spreads, we're back to where we were a little while ago.
I got two sort of associated questions. One is, what in heck could it be that would stop somebody from getting vaccinated if it could save their life? So we'll start with that one. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I have a friend I know, an acquaintance friend, and I had a long conversation with him about this point. And it didn't reach the point of argument, but it was sort of an animated. And it just came from this sense of general disbelief. I don't know how much of this is conspiracy theories. You can go on the internet and find support for any point of view you have. Somebody out there will tell you this is all a plot or, you know, some ridiculous things. And I told them, I said, look, I've been vaccinated. I had no negative reaction to it. My arm was sore for the 2 days that I had the vaccinations, spread out by 3 weeks. Why won't you do it? And there was no credible response. It was a combination of, we don't know the long-term effects. I don't know what's in it. When he said, I don't know what's in it, he said, hey, you eat a hot dog. Do you know what's in a hot dog? I mean, you know, let's not be stupid here. This is your life at stake. But, you know, impervious. And I just kind of had to change it. We had to talk about the Yankees and the Mets because I couldn't make any headway and we'd just be into an argument if I went further.
I want to go back to the governor and to his race. You know, you're a respected man. You've been around for a long time. You know your politics. Lee Zeldin? What, are they crazy?
Well, you know, I served with Lee in the state Senate. And, of course, I ran against Rob Astorino, so I have a little bit of an insight into these situations. You know, my sense, and I don't think this is a particularly insightful comment, Alan, but I'll share with you anyway. For a Republican to win statewide, the Republican is going to have to win over independent votes and some Democratic votes. It's not possible to win it on the far right, and that's all you have. And yet, because of the hold that Donald Trump has on the hardcore Republican base, you have Republican candidates that are appealing as close as they can be to a Trump mindset. Now, I don't doubt that they'll win upstate, but when you get to the suburbs, the Republicans and the independents and the Democrats down here are much more moderate, and it's highly unlikely we're going to vote for a hardcore Republican candidate. George Pataki, who I knew, was governor, he laid out the game plan of how a Republican wins. And I don't think I'm seeing the current crop of Republican gubernatorial candidates moving in that direction. They're going in the other direction. I don't know how they put together the math to win.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's exactly right, the Pataki standard. But of course, there's something that is scaring the Republicans so that when they get a middle of the road or like a Pataki, they can't do it because they're afraid of somehow the long arm. I know this sounds silly, but the long arm of Trump and his followers reaching down to them.
Well, Mr. Trump is coming to a Briarcliff Manor, I think, sometime in August, and a big fundraising rally. So he's going to be in our backyard. You know, I don't know that in a place like Westchester he is quite as popular as he might be elsewhere. But, you know, we've come to the point now where we're more concerned about rallying the base rather than forming a coalition across independents and so forth. When I first ran for office, the very first time, it was for the city council in Rye, which is a small city and was a heavily Republican city. I could not have won that seat, nor to be a county legislator out of that area, unless I could convince some Republicans and independents to support me. And you need that coalition if you're going to govern. Because when you govern after that, you've got to be able to find compromise that's broad-based enough in order to implement it. And that's the problem you have in the federal government right now. It's completely, you know, one side versus the other. And I'm afraid that as New York moves closer to that, we're not really going to be able to tackle the kind of problems we have. Because to be candid with you, the problems that we have are not automatically all solved by liberal policies or automatically all solved by conservative policies. My time in this job and in the other jobs I've had tell me that many times you have to find a middle ground, which is hard to get the, you know, the most motivated activists to accept. But if you don't do that, you don't get a credible way to solve the problem.
We are talking to Westchester County Executive George Latimer. A pleasure, by the way. Let me ask you this. You beat Rob Astorino, and now he's running for governor of New York again. How do you run for governor after you got beat for county executive?
Well, and Rob, who then ran for the state Senate last year, also lost that race, too. Look, Rob is a talented guy. He was a very difficult opponent. We had quite the battle here. I won by a lot, but it was not apparent that I was going to win by a lot until very late in the campaign. And there were factors such as the Trump factor and that I think were part of this. I think, you know, when you're out there proclaiming that you have won in an area, Westchester County, which he has, he won the county executive seat twice, but those races in 2009 and 2013 were in a different climate. This is now 8 years later. There's a different climate out there. And I just on the substance, Alan, someone's going to say, well, people are leaving New York in droves. Well, they are leaving in parts of upstate, but they're not leaving in the Hudson Valley. Westchester is going to gain population this year, and I suspect so will the city and the island. You're going to hear you know, people say, well, the people are wild and lawless in the streets. Well, you know, that's not the case in Westchester. We've seen a downturn in crime over the last 4 years. So this sort of formulaic ideological argument is going to fall, you know, flat with those people who say, I don't see those things. Tell me what you are going to do to improve the economy in a conscious way. That's what we're struggling to do just in our county. We've had some innovative programs that we think will work. It'll take time for them to work. Regeneron and Morgan have expanded their operations in Westchester. And candidly, not because of something I did, although the IDA will help fund those things, but because we're practical-minded in the way we approach these things. And so, you know, when I look at the challenges for the Republicans or the Democrats running for governor, it's to try to have not just an ideological statement that motivates your base, but how are you practically going to deal with the problems before you? And in candor, New York's problems are greater than Westchester's problems. So I don't think it's easy. When I sat in the state legislature in both houses, these were difficult issues that we had to deal with. You mentioned one of them, school funding. That is a serious issue for the poor districts. If you can't get proper education of kids, then they can't function in the society. The criminal justice issues are serious issues. We've dealt with them pretty well in Westchester. But look, you know, Westchester County Jail is not Rikers Island. You know, there's two different standards of these things. But I do think it takes reasonable people to discuss solutions and not just lecture each other from ideological standpoints. That's not going to get us where we need to go.
So let me just stay with gun violence for a moment. You got a solution?
Well, look, I think that, you know, the problems of gun violence in the urban centers really require us to get guns off the street. And that shouldn't make any legal gun owner afraid, because the people who own guns legally, whether they're long arms or handguns or whatever they are not subject to the kind of confiscation that we need to do in those urban centers where there's drive-by shootings and so forth. So the concern that the minute you talk about the gun immediately triggers a negative response from the right is my judgment, a misplaced urgency. The urgency is where you have this kind of poverty and this kind of disconnection from society. You add guns to the mix, and you have the senseless shootings that you're seeing. We've had a couple in Westchester, not many, but a couple, but we see it more aggressively in the city. So I think the initiative to get the guns off the street is essential. And again, I don't think it affects the legal gun owners who live primarily in upstate New York, the people who have a culture where guns are part of their life and lifestyle. I don't see those two things as in conflict.
We're talking to George Latimer. He is, of course, the county executive of Westchester County, and he is a Democrat. So what about the wealthy paying more money, more in taxes? You know, you're a Democrat. Democrats usually support the idea that people at the top should pay a little bit more. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the way we've operated in our county government, in the last 2 years, we've cut county property taxes. I think we can cut it for a third year. We don't raise taxes for sport. We raise it when we think that we have a lack of revenue to provide the basic services. And at a county level, you know, Alan, we provide those sexy services, sewer treatment, a bus system, basic probation services, and a host of different very localized services. But we've been able to, with what we'd like to say is smart management, renegotiate contracts. We had a voluntary separation agreement that saved us labor costs, and we've been able to cut taxes. When we talk on the larger level, the concern about taxation and having, you know, wealthier people pay more has to also be leavened by the fact that wealthy people have the ability to relocate. And if we reach a point where we lose the high-level income taxpayer, then we lose the revenue we need to run the system. So I don't think we can look, as I said a second ago, about raising taxes just as an automatic thing. I think you have to show a balance between what are the services you're providing, and if you do have to raise taxes, and I had to do that my first year. I walked in the door, and I was handed a fiscal mess that I had to clean up. You do it for a purpose, and you explain that purpose to people, as opposed to, hey, you're doing well, you have to kick more money in. And I have found, and you've seen this too, many of the wealthiest people in the state have been willing to pay more taxes. Not all of them, but many of them have. They have a big newspaper ad in the New York Times. But they do want to know that the money that they're putting in is going for sensible programs that will help improve the society, and not just, hey, let me tap into your wallet blindly.
Everybody knows, George Latimer, that there is trouble hiring these days. And I'm sure that's true in Westchester County, too. And closely tied to that is the matter of affordable housing. And every locality has to deal with this now. What are you doing?
Well, right now in affordable housing, we did a study, which was long overdue, hadn't been done in 10, 15 years, as to what our status was in affordable housing. And that study came back 2 years ago and said, we need at least 11,000 new units of affordable housing. And at that point, my predecessor was trying to solve a lawsuit that he had with HUD over affordable housing, and we were required to do 750 units in certain places. As we speak right now, we're working on somewhere north of 2,000 units, and it's hard to establish affordable housing because you have to either get the land at a low cost, or you have to get some federal subsidies to help the individuals who are going to rent so they can afford whatever the rents are. You can get a certain amount of percentage on market buildings. So as they build a market building and they have, 200 units and they put aside 20 for affordability, something of that nature. But it's very hard to meet that kind of a need. And if we can't meet that need, we are not going to be able to house the workforce. And the workforce, the people who aren't making, you know, financial Wall Street salaries, to live in Westchester County with where our market rate housing is going becomes almost impossible. And once people have to start driving 40 miles to go to work, they find a job closer to where they live. And that is part of why we have some of the drain on jobs at certain levels in our county. We try to address it. It's difficult. The state has been a good partner with us. the federal government under the prior federal administration was not. We're hopeful now that under the Biden administration it will be and provide some resources. And we have, you know, a number of developers who are skilled in developing affordable housing, and we have to try to work with them, find the right sites. We've done a couple of projects that are pretty innovative, but we've got a lot to do. And I bet this is the story of every suburban county, not just in New York, but everywhere across the country. There's pressure on us to do more of it.
I'm sure you're right. I wanted to ask you a question. As a political practitioner that you are, you looked across the border and you saw ranked choice voting going on next door. It looked kind of complicated to an awful lot of people. What do you think?
I think for my purposes in Westchester County, the jury is still out on it. What you have in New York City is an almost assurity that the Democratic candidate, once nominated, is going to win. That is not quite the case here. I did mention up front we've won a lot of races, but we don't win races 80-20 in most parts of Westchester. There's still competitive 55-45 races. Ranked choice voting, I think, happens because you get 10 people that run in the Democratic primary, and there is no Republican opponent. Out here in Westchester, you may have two or three candidates in a race, but you don't have 10. So the need to have ranked choice voting, I think, is much less here. I really want to analyze what happened down ticket from the mayoral race to understand exactly how it worked in all those council races. And of course, the state would have to authorize these things. But I don't think at this point a place like Westchester County is prepared to do ranked choice voting. And it only applies in primaries, and for them it applies in special elections because they have a special provision in special elections. If you remember, Mayor Bloomberg made special elections nonpartisan so everybody can get on the ballot. We don't have that here. We have the normal two-party system nominating candidates in special elections.
We're talking to George Latimer. He is, of course, the county executive of Westchester County. I have to say, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. I have to beg you to come on again and talk to us because we loved having you. George, thank you so much, and come back, will you please?
Alan, thank you very much, and thanks for the work you're doing. I listen to you every week.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.